John, there are three elements at the heart of the initiative's thinking around what is an appropriate education. Can you just share with us what those three elements are, please?
Yes, for a long time I've been talking about an analogy of a three-legged stool, which represents a balanced education. Now, in a modern world, we're not really significantly sure of what a three-legged stool is all about. A three-legged stool is the old milkmaid's stool they used to use in the parlours. And the advantage of a three-legged stool is that providing the legs are of the same length, you can balance on any surface, however rough. Four-legged chairs don't do that. Now, what are the legs of those stools? They are the community, the home, and the school. In other words, a proper education has to involve the development of the emotions, which are in the home, the intellect and the rigour, which is in the school, and the sociability and the ability to see your way through the world, which is all to do with the community. So really, right at the very heart of all this is, yes, a balanced education has to involve the home, the school and the community. If any one of those legs gets too short, then the stool doesn't balance. And one of the horrors of recent years has been people have said, well, the home doesn't matter so much now, community doesn't matter, so let's put it all into the school. By doing that, it's like trying to sit on a walking stick. It wobbles all over the place. So that's the first thought, which is at the beginning. The second thought is that learning never proceeds in a straight line. In fact, the brain doesn't work in a straight line. There's a lovely word in the English language called meandering. It's what you do when you set off on an interesting walk. You think you're going in a general direction, which you are, but then you see something 100 yards to your left and you wander over there, take a look at that. And you're looking at that and then something else occurs and you just go in a slightly different direction. Now, meandering is an interesting term because it relates to the lower part of a river course. A fast-flowing river coming down into the mountains, going very quickly, goes in an almost straight line. The more it gets towards the flat bottomlands, it starts to meander. It goes around. Why does it do that? Because water never flows in a straight line. It has what's called helicoidal flow. As a piece of water flows down through a channel, then the water nearest the side gets slowed down by friction. The water in the middle goes faster. Because that's going faster, it then starts drawing in the water from the side. It's just like a corkscrew moving on down. As you get towards the lower reaches of the river, it's actually taking stuff from one side of the bank and depositing it on the other, taking other bits around and moving it together. So by the time you get down to the end of the river, you've got this lovely mixture of all the things that have come from the top. And in fact, that is exactly how the human brain works. It does not go in a straight line. It's never just thinking about one thing. It's collecting bits and pieces and moving them around. So my second point is essentially this. We have a helicoidal brain, something which actually takes and moves things around. It's always trying to resort ideas. And the third idea is even more basic than that. If you watch young children, then you're of course aware that when they're very young, they're intrigued with what's going on and they ask endless questions. Questions, 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 and then something happens when they come into adolescence. It's not wanting to follow what you're saying, it's actually saying, almost saying, stuff what you say, I'm going to wait out for myself. And as a father myself, and you as a father, you know this is a horrible situation, but they're not old enough to decide that. Well, of course, unless we let them have the opportunity to decide it, then they foul it up completely. Now, the education system in Britain and in many other parts of the world itself was fouled up just over 100 years ago when the president of the American Federation of Psychologists, I think that was his title, said adolescence is a disease. Adolescence is something that has gone wrong with the brain. You mustn't let it wander around like that. You've got to keep it in its prepubescent stage of just listening to what's told. And therefore, the theory came in, the quicker you can encourage children, not encourage, force children, to stay in the classroom for longer and longer and longer, stop thinking about sex, stop thinking about wandering off and doing things for themselves, and just give them so much damn work to do that they get exhausted, and therefore they'll come out of school amenable. Now, that is a disaster. So my third point is that adolescence is an opportunity, not a problem. But unless we actually encourage adolescents to build on what we did with them when they were very young, they will never be functional adults. And consequently, as you know, my book was overschooled but undereducated, because actually we're not letting children have the full development, the helicoidal brain, the full development of homeschool and community. Instead, we're saying let the school do everything. And actually, by the time they're about 20 or 22, 23, those young men and women will not have the capability of thinking for themselves.
Now, knowing the work of the initiative, there is also a deeper philosophical question around all of this. Could you just share your thinking on that?
Yes, and this is an interesting one because I've given so many lectures on it. The title of the lecture has always been, "What kind of education for what kind of world?" Now, that always gets people, well, where are we moving into? But I then followed up with the supplementary. Do we want our children to grow up as battery hens or free-range chickens? Now, not everybody listening to this interview will know very much about farming, but you do have the conventional model of, you're thinking of chickens going around a farmyard, picking up bits of food wherever they can, going after the corner, laying their eggs and whatever, and then maybe somebody comes and steals the eggs, and it seems very inefficient. The early farmers said, wouldn't it be far better to put our laying hens in little wire cages, 12 inches by 12 inches by 12 inches, have the food delivered to them on a conveyor belt, have the water delivered, have a relatively bright light to keep them warm, and believe it or not, even soft music. And doing that, the accountant said, well, you're doing brilliantly. Look, you know, the eggs just roll out for the minimum of inconvenience, because those chickens were not standing on their own legs. They weren't flapping their own wings, and they, in fact, were losing the ability to be a survival chicken. If you kept them like that, and then suddenly, for an accident, the cage disappears, those chickens can't even stand on their own feet, can't flap their wings. They're a predatory, they're a perfect morsel for a predatory fox to come and gobble up. Now, if any of people listening to this have ever been chased around a farmyard by a free-range bantam cockerel, you'll know that a free-range chicken of that kind has enormous flexibility. It's only a 20th of your size, maybe a 50th of your size. You attack it, but it knows one thing, it knows it well. It knows that if it goes and pecks at your ankle, you will scream. And so you think you're going to lunge and pick this thing up. It evades you, goes for your ankle, bites it, and you scream. You look to try and throttle the damn thing, and by that time, what's it done? It's flown up to a beam above the farm, above the yard, and it's crowing at you. Now, I ask this question in all seriousness. In a world of continuous change, is it safe to treat children as if they're chickens in a battery farm, when actually they're going to have all the ability to survive in different circumstances? Free-range chickens survive in a way in which battery hens don't. Those three first ideas all come together into that topic, free-range or battery hens.